This is the Lombardi Line with Story Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, let's have some fun. It's time for the Lombardi Line right here on VSIN, presented by DraftKings this Friday, May 10th. Stormy's taking the day off. I'm Joe Serrallo filling in live from sunny Los Angeles. He's Mike Palm live from our beautiful studios inside the Circa Sportsbook. And we've got a hell of a weekend ahead. A couple of pivotal NBA game threes tonight. We're going to hit the ice, of course, talk some Stanley Cup playoffs. And my favorite thing to bet, some weekend baseball. Mike, how you doing today?
Yo, good to work with you. I know we met briefly when you were in town a few weeks ago. So excited for the opportunity today.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm looking forward to it. Hey, let's dive right in. I know you're a big hockey guy. Last night, some really great games on the ice, especially one of my hometown teams, the New York Rangers, going down to Carolina in what seemed like a pro Rangers crowd, going up 3-0 in that series. Mike, they're up 7-0 combined this postseason. The Rangers haven't lost a game yet. Are you starting to see some shades of 1994? What do you think about this Rangers team? I know a lot of people thought Carolina would give them hell this series.
Well, the odds makers said Carolina, despite not having home ice, was the superior team here, favored to win the cup and favored in this series as much as $1.75 in some places. I know Jeff Davis, who's our principal NHL market maker here at Circa Sports, was high on the Hurricanes as well. His own number was closer to 185 here. I took the Rangers. I couldn't pass up 150 for the series. But I did bet Carolina last night in regulation minus 110 because I thought this is their whole season. They've got to win this game. I thought it was a little bit panicky of Brendan Moore to go to Kochekov. I know Anderson hadn't been terrific, but he is your number one guy. Not saying the goaltending was the fault at all. They didn't score enough goals. 2-2 going to overtime. But boy, the Rangers now with a stranglehold on this series. And certainly look like they're punching their ticket to the Eastern Conference Finals. When Carolina goes back and looks at this, it's the special teams play, not the 5-on-5 that's going to bite them. I mean, 4 power play goals now after last night for the Rangers in the series, and they give up a shorthanded goal last night. Simply inexcusable. I wonder if the seat is getting hot for Rod Brind'Amour, despite all the regular season success he's had there with the Canes. If they come up short again in the playoffs, not able to make a Stanley Cup final even, if he's able to exit stage left and maybe get the Maple Leafs job. I know Craig Berube's name probably at the top of the list in Toronto, but that's an interesting angle to this series as well.
Yeah, and we'll definitely be talking more about that Maple Leafs vacancy a little bit later on in the show. So game 4 coming up now, Carolina trying to save their season. And it's interesting when you look at how to handicap this game. The Rangers are still underdogs. So I suppose when you look at this, the Rangers getting a plus 125 on that, Carolina laying $1.50. How are you handicapping game 4? Are you going with the Rangers and the momentum and, of course, the value? Or do you look at this and do you say, no, Carolina's got to play stopper here. They're not going to drop 2 at home. That's why they're favorites. I'm banking on them to keep their season alive. For me personally, just the way that game 3 unfolded, I feel like you got to go with momentum. And oh, by the way, it helps that the value is then on your side as well.
Yeah. So for me, I sit here with a Rangers series ticket. So I'm not interested in doubling down on the Rangers in game 4. If anything, I would be looking maybe to try to middle something in terms of just trying to get the Hurricanes to pick up one game here. I wouldn't lay 150, certainly 145. If the price were to drift down in the 130 range, I'd consider betting Carolina in this spot. But maybe even a series handicap. Maybe I bet the Rangers minus a game and a half, thinking if maybe the Hurricanes can steal one in New York as well at a plus price here, or however you want to bet that to end in 6. But I would not bet the. I can tell you right now, Joe, I'm not betting the Rangers in game 4 unless this became a runaway, but there's no reason it would. I would need to take upwards of 150 on the Rangers for it to make sense with my future position.
All right. Well, Mike, speaking of series tickets, I've got a little series action on the Colorado Avalanche. Got them at plus 105 going into the series against Dallas. Now they're going home, tied 1-1. They're laying $1.30 last I checked. at home in game three against Dallas. The Stars have looked sharp, though. They've obviously, they went down 2-0 to the Vegas Knights. Since then, they're one of the hottest teams in these Stanley Cup playoffs. How are you looking at this series now that it shifts to Colorado, one of the best home ice advantages in the league?
Yeah, 30 wins, 9 losses, and 1 overtime loss for the Avalanche in the regular season. They win both games against Winnipeg in round one. I said midway through the first round, when the Stars and Knights were 2-2, that I thought the final Stanley Cup final would be Florida and Dallas. I'm worried a little bit about Dallas here. I'd like to get your perspective as someone holding a Avalanche series ticket. How do you feel about last night's game? Because I have a certain perspective of someone who has futures on the Stars.
Yeah, I mean, look, from the seat that I'm sitting in right now, I'm not worried about Colorado's offense. That's certainly, you know, never going to be a concern. The defense and the goaltending looked a little shaky early in game one, but they did clamp down in the second, third, and then ultimately overtime. Obviously giving up 5 goals to Dallas in their last game last night. Not ideal, but I'm banking on the defense to step up as the series progresses, especially at home. You know the offense is going to be there. It's one of the best offenses in the league. So is Dallas, to give them credit where it's due. But where I'm sitting right now with the Abs plus 105, I mean, if you look at the series price now, you'd have to lay $1.20 on Colorado. Dallas is even money. I'm more inclined, frankly, to double down on the Abs and go game by game. I certainly don't think they drop 2 at home. I think there's a way better chance that they win both at home. So I could sit back and just stick with my series ticket, but I'm pretty inclined to keep going in on Colorado here. Only laying $1.30 at home. When are you going to get that good of a price for the Avalanche in a home game? So I'm willing to lay the $1.30 there.
I'd lay it now if you want to lay it, because I don't think that's going to be available tomorrow night when the game of the puck drops at 7 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock local time. So if I'm Pete DeBoer, I'm a little bit concerned because, look, for two periods, they played very, very well. Ottinger was terrific. Ottinger was the goalie for the first 40 minutes last night that they've always thought he was going to be a Vezina winner. And he hasn't quite gotten there, frankly. I mean, his playoff performance heading into this year, save percentage is below .870. You're up 4-0. Everything's going your way. The Avs look dejected. They give up the third and fourth goals at the end of that, you know, late in the second period. And yet with 3 minutes left in the game, you find yourself up 4-3. I mean, it's got to be very concerning about even being able to hold a 4-goal lead. They couldn't hold a 3-goal lead in game one. And I give them the excuse. They had just finished the brutal series with the Knights. They had short rest, and the Avs were very rested after taking care of the Jets in 5. But I'm with you here. I think this is a cheap price on the Avalanche at home, and I think the series price is very reasonable at $1.20 as well.
Yeah, I mean, the story of the first two games in this series, neither team can put together a full 60 minutes. It's consistently been Dallas starting hot, Colorado finishing hot. I don't think Dallas is going to be able to start hot on the road. They're not going to be afforded that luxury of having the crowd on their side, having the momentum on their side. So if Colorado starts hot, we've seen the way that they've been finishing, advantage Avalanche in this one. Let's hit the hardwood. Let's switch over from the ice, because the Boston Celtics did something I don't think anyone thought they were going to do last night, and they got demolished. A 20 plus point loss on their home court against an undermanned Cleveland Cavaliers team. Series is tied 1-1. Headed to Cleveland, where the Cavs went 4-0 at home. I said it actually that weekend we met in April, previewing the Cavs Magic series. I think I said it after game one. The home team was going to win every game that series. Well, that's exactly what happened. It went 7. The home team won every game. And Cleveland 4-0 on their home court. Do they have a shot now that they're headed home, tied 1-1? It's a long shot, certainly. I mean, their series price, they're still 7-1. Do they have a shot, Mike, at knocking off the one seed and a team that right now is a pick 'em to win the NBA Finals?
Well, you know, Joe, I the Celtics are always their own worst enemy, right? And we were always trying to find a team to beat the Celtics in the East because they were a negative price already at the beginning of March to represent the East in the NBA Finals. And they have these head-scratching clunkers that they throw in the playoffs. Is this Cleveland team in their current form as good as a Miami last year who beat Boston? I don't think so. I don't. And I mean, if anything now, I think this is the time probably where you can try to find an angle here to get a much better price on Boston having blown that game. Whether it's taking Boston in five at plus 110 or taking Boston in six at plus 225, if you think Cleveland can steal another game, I still think it's beyond fascination to think that the Cavaliers are going to win four games in this series. I mean, they could not win in Orlando, to your point, in any of those three games, and yet were able to go into Boston last night and win handily. And Celtics offering very little resistance in the fourth quarter. If you wanted to bet all the in-game numbers in the second half, you'd have covered them all with Cleveland.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't think there's any shot that the Cavaliers are going to win four games this series. I think that at plus 225, Boston in six might be worth a look. I think Cleveland may actually be able to steal another one at home, go back to TD tied 2-2, and then the Celtics will probably turn it on and win games five and six. I think that's a realistic outcome. The fact that Cleveland, without Jared Allen, went into Boston and out-rebounded them 44-31, to me, that is a tremendous red flag for the Celtics. And, you know, we're going to talk about the Knicks probably in the next block plenty throughout the course of today's show. They've got a big game three with the Pacers tonight. But one thing that the Knicks do is they rebound and they're tough. And everyone's like, oh, well, the Knicks are undermanned. They're playing six, seven guys. Who does Boston have coming off that bench? Outside of Peyton Pritchard, I mean, they might be running eight or nine guys out there, but they're not eight or nine impactful guys. The Celtics' lack of toughness and lack of depth is really concerning. They're not going to lose to the Cavs, but I certainly would not say that the Celtics team is going to win the NBA championship this year. We'll be back. We got Knicks Pacers on a Friday night. Don't go anywhere. You're locked in to the Lombardi Line.
Story Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't checked out the newly revamped VSiN.com, head over there now. We've got a betting preview for tomorrow's UFC fight night, betting splits for tonight's NBA and NHL playoff games, and of course, picks, and more picks. That's VSiN, VSIN.com. Briefly mentioned the Knicks-Pacers game coming up tonight. More on that right here on the Lombardi Line. I'm Joe Serallo. He's Mike Palm. Thanks for sticking with us. Rick Carlisle, Mike, wants to cry foul and blame the officials for the Pacers heading home in a 2-0 hole. Well, he just finally got fined for his, I would say, excessive criticism. $35,000. Mike, I want to get your take on it. First, we've got the soundbite. Let's take a listen at what Carlisle had to say.
You know, I'm always talking to our guys about not making it about the officials. But, you know, we deserve a fair shot, you know, and there's not a consistent balance, and that's disappointing. You know, small market teams deserve an equal shot. They deserve a fair shot. No matter where they're playing.
I mean, Carlisle looks completely defeated. It just sounds like absolute crybaby nonsense. Mike, what's your take? Does he have a valid point in your opinion, or is he just up there whining because his team's down 2-0?
Well, I mean, I think Minneapolis and Oklahoma City small markets are doing okay so far if we look to the West. I do agree that, I mean, how do you not have kick balls reviewable? I mean, they have to take a look at that. I mean, that's a very obvious thing, did it hit someone's foot or not, but they want them to look at subjectively block charge. I mean, that's the hardest call in all of sports, and they think they can go to the monitor and do that and moving screens and all that. Anyhow, they said, what, 78 mistakes? What was their number? They should have fined him, 78,000 or 80, whatever he said, there was the number of mistakes they made. I know they said 29 in game one and what, 30 or 49? I mean, it was ridiculous. I think it's a bad message for the team, really, actually. I mean, they had two games that could have been coming out of New York up 2-0, right? I mean, they've been competitive in the series, and now they've got this mentality, woe is me, that we're not going to get a fair shake from the officials. I think he should have focused on what his team needs to do to win these games and how do they defend in the half court against this Knicks team that really, you know, has a one and doesn't has a half of a one and then a supporting cast, not even a really defined two and threes. It's different on every night. But they have a great coach in Thibodeau. I thought that this was the best coaching matchup of the second round with Thibodeau and Carlisle. Maybe I'm going to be wrong with that from the stance that Carlisle is taking. But if you're a better, I don't think you can draw positive out of what Carlisle's doing with the press conference.
No, I mean, if you're a better, and to your point, if you're on his team, I mean, that's a pretty young team that the Indiana Pacers have. Really talented, but pretty young. And I think that they certainly turn to Carlisle for leadership more than, say, any veterans that are actually on the floor. And when that's the message that you're getting from your leader, that woe is me, world is against us, I don't see them bouncing back from that. And also, I got news for you, Rick. You were up 10 at halftime. You lit the world on fire, your team did rather, with 73 first half points in Madison Square Garden game two. You went into the locker room with Jalen Brunson's status questionable for the rest of the game. Mitchell Robinson out. OG Anunoby later on in that third quarter got hurt, pulled his hamstring, missed the entire fourth quarter. Now he's missing game three. I mean, everything that could have gone Indiana's way was going Indiana's way. You blew the lead. That's on your team. That's not on the refs. That's not on anyone else but your team blowing a 10-point halftime lead when your offense couldn't be stopped. Maybe instead of the refs, maybe ask Tyrese Halliburton why he didn't shoot the ball the entire third quarter. Why he came out after having 22 points in the first half and he looked like a timid 8-year-old in the third quarter. I've got no sympathy for Rick Carlisle or for Joel Embiid and the 76ers or everyone crying foul about the New York Knicks who don't have Julius Randle, who have a banged up Jalen Brunson, who now are without OG Anunoby, who have lost Bojan Bogdanovic and now Mitchell Robinson for the postseason. The Knicks are playing with six guys. You want to look at Josh Hart's minutes? The last four games, he's played 48 each of the first two games this series, played 46, practically a night off for him, game six against Philly, played all 53 in game five's overtime loss to the 76ers. I mean, has anyone ever had a four-game stretch like that in the history of the NBA playoffs? Rick Carlisle wants to cry. He's playing against six guys. And Mike, to your point, coming into this postseason, a lot of people would look at this roster and say that there's no clear number two. You got a top five MVP finisher in Jalen Brunson, but after that, it's next man up. And that takes both physical and mental toughness to have a team with such a next man up mentality. Indiana, you want to talk about mental toughness? They've got none of it right now, and that starts with the leadership. Rick Carlisle sounds like nothing but an absolute bitter crybaby to me.
I have to ask you, Joe, I know you're from the East Coast. Was the Knicks your NBA team growing up?
I'm absolutely a Knicks fan, man. I bleed blue and orange. Did it come out a little bit in that rant?
I was a stretch, but I thought maybe.
Yeah. No one gets as passionate about this stuff as a Knicks fan. But it's true. You know, from an objective lens, you look at this team, man, and no one's been battling more injuries than the Knicks. That's why I look at the Celtics and that deflated performance last night. You know, we were talking about it at the end of the last block. And now that they're without Kristaps Porzingis, all of a sudden, that depth looks pretty scarce. You don't have Al Horford coming off the bench. It's pretty much Peyton Pritchard. And then who else? You know, Sam Hauser, Xavier Tillman, Luke Kornet. Those guys combined for what, like 3 points last night? So the Celtics, now depth is an issue. And it's showing because they don't really have that toughness, in my opinion. They've got all the talent in the world in their starting five, but they lack toughness. With the Knicks, it's kind of the opposite. No one looked at this roster a few weeks ago and said they were the most talented, maybe even top five most talented rosters in the NBA playoffs. It's why the Sixers, as a 7 seed, were favored against the Knicks. But one thing they have, and it starts at the top with Tom Thibodeau, is an unquestionable toughness that's just simply not matched by anyone else, I don't think, in this field. Maybe Minnesota is the one team that could match that toughness. But it's a pretty rare, special thing what they have. And Rick Carlisle is just exuding the exact opposite.
I have to tell you, you know, from a bookmaker's perspective, the Knicks have been good for the handle. A little bit surprising to me, but, they've been somewhat of a substitute. You know, the best two teams for those of us here in Las Vegas are the Lakers, number one, and then really the Warriors. And the Lakers out early and the Warriors didn't make it. I thought we were going to have a very depressed handle for our NBA playoffs this year, but the Knicks have really helped it in the East. And then I was at Encore the other night, Monday night during game one because we had the AGA directors dinner before the board meeting Tuesday. And I stopped by the book at Wynn because the dinner was at Lakeside. And I mean, it was just all Knicks fans watching that game. So I know they get more on the Strip, more New York people stay on the Strip than they do downtown, but it's been pretty impressive, the amount of interest in the Knicks so far.
Yeah, and it's been a fun postseason. You know, don't forget, look, obviously everyone knows we haven't won a championship since 1973, but we also haven't been relevant in about two decades, minus, you know, the 2013 Carmelo Anthony, Amari Stoudemire-led team, that their peak relevancy was only making it to the second round, where, of course, we lost to these Indiana Pacers and the famous Roy Hibbert block, you know, when Melo went for a dunk and Hibbert met him at the rim. It's been two decades of, you know, really nothing to be proud of as Knicks fans. In fact, my whole lifetime, I'm going to be 26 in a month, and I'm too young to remember 99 and 2000. I was 1-2 years old at the time. I've never seen a Knicks team go to the Eastern Conference Finals. This has a chance to be the most successful Knicks team that I've at least been able to enjoy, not technically of my lifetime, but, you know, realistically of my lifetime. And the buzz around, you know, New York, Knicks fans really all around the country, from New York to Vegas, it's been something special. You know, we do have another game tonight, Nuggets-Timberwolves, and this has been a pretty surprising series. To your point about a small market team doing well, the T-Wolves up 2-0, and now they're headed home. Is this going to get back to Denver? How do you see this one wrapping up? Do we see the MVP, Nikola Jokic, just won his third in the last 4 years, going home before he even gets a chance to go back to a game five?
Boy, it's been amazing to be watching this in the second quarter of game two. I was just shocked. And really, the Nuggets didn't put up much resistance in the second half. There was no big run. They didn't get it back to single digits. Minnesota looks like the best team in the NBA right now, to me, and I'm not an expert. I don't watch a ton of NBA, but boy, did they, I know they're a great defensive team, but what they've done on the offensive end and what they've put this Denver team through, I thought that Denver was the value to bet for the title because the Celtics were so low, and I say they always get good shots because the ball goes through Jokic's hands and they take good shots. They don't try to back anybody down. They're not shooting threes that they shouldn't. And yet the offenses look very disjointed here in this series. And everybody loved Phoenix in the first round. In Minnesota, it was a terrible matchup because, you know, Phoenix plays enough defense. Minnesota doesn't play good offense. And they just swept right on through. You talk about like the Rangers and getting all this momentum and not losing. I mean, this Minnesota train is rolling. And it's going to be interesting tonight. Certainly tempting to try to come back with the Nuggets plus 4.5. But all eyes here, and this might be the highest right game of the playoffs for us to date.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. Anthony Edwards just said, don't compare me and call me the next MJ. Call me the first Anthony Edwards. That kid's a dog. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting started on the Lombardi Line right here on Visa.
This is the Lombardi Line with Story Bonatoni and Mike Palm on Visa, the sports betting network.
Are you ready to become your own sports betting expert? Look no further than a VSiN Pro subscription, your ticket to insider insights, exclusive data, and winning strategies. For a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. Normally priced at $240, you can now grab your subscription for just $199. Sign up today, and we'll give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use the promo code Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see who has the best win percentage and ROI, 19 hours of live programming, including expert breakdowns and in-game analysis, and proven betting systems from professional handicappers, as well as our exclusive betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Just visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199 with the promo code Lombardi. That's VSiN, VSIN.com/subscribe. Joe Serrallo, Mike Palm here, taking you through the Lombardi Line on this beautiful Friday, May 10th. And Mike, let's do something that we both love to do. Let's hit the diamond. It's a Friday, which means that there are no teams off today. We've got a full slate, a lot of great pitching matchups. That's where I specialize, pitcher props. I'm excited to look at today's slate. Mike, start us off. Give me your favorite play of the day.
You know, Cole Irvin labored in that organization in Oakland with the A's, and I think he's really turned the corner since he's come to the Orioles and got on a contender here. And the market really hasn't caught up to him yet. I think they're still pricing him as the 4.5 plus the ERA guy that he was in Oakland here. And I had two plays today. This is my favorite of the day against the Diamondbacks. Played yesterday in Cincinnati, blew the lead and came back and won that game. Irvin, only $1.25 when I bet him. I see he's up to $1.30, $1.32 in the market here. He's been good. He's been very good, and I'll take my chances with a lineup that I think is one of the top three in the American League, if not in baseball, with the Orioles.
Yeah. I mean, how do you argue against that bet? I mean, Cole Irvin, to your point, has looked really good this year. A lot of these pitchers on Baltimore's staff have impressed. In fact, you can argue that since his stellar debut, Corbin Burnes maybe has been the least impressive compared to, you know, the expectations that everyone has for him of these Orioles rotation pieces. Kyle Bradish, since his return from injury, has looked great. John Means had a great debut the other day. Grayson Rodriguez, no sophomore slump in sight. And Cole Irvin looks awesome. Brandon Pfaadt, on the other hand, stunk last regular season, was probably Arizona's number two in the postseason. Merrill Kelly was great. Zach Gallen wasn't. And Brandon Pfaadt had a great postseason. I, for one, thought that that would carry over into this regular season. So far, it hasn't. That ERA is up near five. And you're getting the Orioles at home against the guy with an ERA near five, laying only $1.30. I'll jump on it with you, Mike. I'm going to look at the Phillies in today's matchup in Miami, taking on the Marlins. And I'm going to go with the run line here and lay $1.20 on it. You've got Ranger Suarez, one of the best pitchers in baseball this year. 6-0, a sub-2 ERA, going up against Trevor Rogers, who is 0-5 with an ERA over 6. I mean, Rogers has been absolutely abysmal for the Marlins this year. And they're just, to me, the tricky part about capping this game. There are so many different ways to bet the Phillies in this one. I ultimately settled on the run line because I thought it was the best combined bet and price, laying just about $1.20 at the -1.5. You can go first five, given Rogers' astronomical ERA and the fact that Suarez has absolutely shoved every outing this year. You can also look at Suarez to get the win if you're offered that prop. Last night, it was +105. It was great value, plus money. This morning, woke up, you had to lay $1.15, so I decided to stick with my run line bet that I had placed last night. And Mike, this kind of brings up a great point. If you're a West Coast guy like you and I are, I think when it comes to baseball, we have a tremendous advantage because most lines don't come out until the same day of the games. I do my best handicapping, typically 11 p.m., midnight the night before, when very few people on the East Coast are up and handicapping at 2, 3 a.m. their time. The price, usually by the time you wake up in the morning, not as good as the opening price the night before. Sometimes it'll bite you, but usually it's a pretty sound strategy. So it begs the question, when do you do your best handicapping?
Yeah, it's at the end of the games, at the end of the night, when they're wrapping up 10-ish, 10:30-ish, because I have to get up very early and I have very little time to handicap in the morning. Usually I'm up by 4:30, 5 o'clock, and I've got things to do. That's why I'm getting up that early. So I tend to do everything night before, and then after that, it's going to be early afternoon before I get another chance to do it. Speaking of the Marlins, I want to ask your opinion, Joe. When Eury Pérez got scratched for the year, I took a shot and bet the Marlins for least wins at 18-1. Am I going to be able to outrun the White Sox and the Rockies now too? I mean, I've got a solid team that's going to lose a ton of games, but these White Sox and their two runs a game might be too much for me.
So the Rockies scare me there. Yeah. I think the one advantage you might have with the Marlins is that the White Sox, if you're paying close attention, they've actually been better at home lately. Last weekend, they had the weekend before, where they swept Tampa at home in three games. Just yesterday, Eric Fetty, who, by the way, had to go to Korea to fix himself in the KBO, all of a sudden has come back. I don't think he's lost a game yet this year. His ERA is 3.00. Fetty looks great. I know my Mets were in the mix for him in the offseason, and now suddenly I'm like, shoot, wish we got him over Adrian Hauser. Fetty pitched really well against the first-place Guardians team yesterday. And the White Sox at home have actually been showing a bit of a pulse. Similarly, the Colorado Rockies, while they haven't yet shown a pulse at home, historically, no matter how bad the Rockies are, they usually play around 500 ball at home, even in their worst years, when on the road, they have far and away the worst road record in baseball. So if the Rockies can pick up a little steam, they scare me more to ruin your bet than the White Sox right now. But if they can pick up a little steam at home, I would think the Marlins are a good bet because they have no home field advantage. Mike, you got another play for today?
Yeah, I'm going to take Assad and the Cubs as a small dog at Pittsburgh. Everybody's Paul Skeens weekend. Everybody's so excited. The K-props are out. Livy done this, and the other, right? Maybe a little bit of a look ahead spot here for the Pirates. Assad's been terrific. He hasn't given up more than two earned runs in any start. And since June 1st last year, Assad has the lowest ERA in Major League Baseball. He's going to give you a solid outing every time. I got him last week at 150-1 for Cy Young. It's a flyer, but he's the only guy that's pitched well early whose odds haven't plummeted. I know you're looking at Glasnow lines today, too. Glasnow is going to be tough to overcome. I know Suarez and Wheeler great for the Phillies. Glasnow is going to end up with the most innings. He's going to end up with probably close to the most strikeouts with Wheeler, and he's going to win 20 games for this Dodgers team. So he's going to be really tough to overcome in the National League. But if he should falter, remember, he hasn't been able to stay healthy. So that's the shot you're taking if you're betting the National League Cy Young market.
Absolutely. You know who reminds me a bit of Tyler Glasnow? This kid, Jared Jones with Pittsburgh. I mean, everyone's talking about Paul Skeens. Has Skeens exceeded three innings in the minors this year? I'm not really, you know, looking forward to his debut all that much. I'll tune in for the first inning, but the Pirates, I don't like the way they baby their guys in the minor. This kid, Jared Jones, on the other hand, he's an absolute dog. He's, what, about 6'6", can dial it up to 100 if need be. If not, he can cruise at 97 for the whole game, has some plus breaking stuff with a nice slider. I mean, this guy's gone for seven or more Ks in all but one start this year. So his K prop, I've seen that at 6.5, 7.5. Shop around, do your own homework on that one. But Jared Jones against Assad, it's a great pitcher's matchup. I'd almost look at the under. You're getting plus money. It's a low number. Seven's about as low as you'll see in Major League Baseball. But at plus money, I mean, even maybe a first five under, I think for the Cubs to win, it's going to come down to can you get Jones's pitch count up and get him out early and hit this Pirates bullpen? That doesn't impress me all that much. I've got one more play, and you went with the value on the Cubs here. I'm going with some value on Logan Webb over 5.5 strikeouts. And to what we discussed earlier, this was plus 120 last night when I placed it. Now it's just plus 105, but it's still a plus money play. Webb is not the biggest strikeout guy, but he's at home against a Reds team that averages 10.9 Ks per game on the road, by far the worst mark in Major League Baseball. And Logan Webb, there is no one with more wicked home and away splits than this guy. His last two starts, I think you're getting 5.5 at a pretty good price here, because his last two starts, he has stunk, but they were at Boston and at Philly. Now he's home, and at home this season in three starts, he's 2-0. With a 0.8 ERA, and he's averaging 7 1/3 innings pitched per start. So if you want to look at his outs recorded prop, it's 18.5 plus 120 to go over on that. That would put you at just 6 1/3, let alone the 7 1/3 he's averaging. On the road this year, he's 1-3 with an ERA up near 6, averaging under 5 innings per start. So keep an eye on Logan Webb. Try to bet him whenever you can at home. When he's on the road, stay the hell away. But I love that Logan Webb over 5.5 Ks. Mike, you going to follow me on that one, or are you going to stay away?
I sure will. They'll let him throw 100 pitches at home.
Every single time, like clockwork. Don't go anywhere. Much more on the Lombardi Line. I'm Joe Serallo. He's Mike Palm. Stick with us here on VSiN.
Story Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers, bet $5, you'll get 150 in bonus bets instantly. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSiN, only on DraftKings, where, of course, the crown is yours. We're going to hit the progressive guest line now. The senior NBA advisor over at FTN, our guy, Zach Graham, all set to join the show. And I just think he's on the New York Knicks tonight, like I am. Zach, how you doing, man? And tell us your thoughts on this Knicks Pacers game 3 in Indy. Hey, Joe, Mike, appreciate you guys having me back here. Yeah, Knicks tonight, man. I was actually chatting about this line with some of our subscribers here at FTN yesterday. I thought it was a bit eye-popping at the time. And once our projections came out and went live this morning, gave me a little bit of confirmation bias here. So our model at FTN does have the Pacers taking game three, but by just about a point here. And I understand that the defensive acumen, right, of this Knicks rotation is going to take a little bit more than a hit with OG Anunoby going out. And I actually think he might, if the Knicks make it through this series, he might miss the entirety of a potential Eastern Conference Finals as well. But going from OG Anunoby to, I think, Precious Achiuwa going to get the start here, maybe Alec Burks, but I think Precious probably the best option to try to stymie Pascal Siakam a little bit at home on the other side. And Tom Thibodeau teams are going to fight and scratch and claw their way more often than not to a competitive game, no matter who is out there, right? And as long as Jalen Brunson, who is listed questionable with that foot issue, as long as he's able to go, I love taking the Knicks here on the road. Only 7 out of 24 games has a Tibbs coach Knicks team lost by 8 or more. 3 of those were back in 2021 in that Hawks series loss. So it's a completely different Knicks roster at this point. And my noggin thinking that a Tibbs coach team is just going to make this one competitive, I'm totally happy to take the points here with the Knicks.
Zach, you took the Knicks for the game, but the two props, a positive one for the Pacers and a negative one for the Knicks. TJ McConnell over 10.5 points and Josh Hart under 12.5 rebounds.
Yeah, so first starting with TJ, I'm a huge Timothy John McConnell fan here, but trying to take my bias out of it, over 10.5 points tonight, 71 games in the regular season for TJ on the Pacers this year. Played 20 or more minutes in 26 of those games. Now, of course, regular season is not a one-to-one comparison that you should use for your playoff lines here, but out of those 26 games, TJ scored 11 or more points in 17 of them, so right around a 65% clip. And in another 3 of those 9 that he didn't go over this number, he scored 10 points. So 8 of his playoff games this postseason, McConnell averaging 10.6 points per game, but over the 3 games that he's played 20 minutes or more, he's averaging 16. And I know that's a small sample size, but something I've talked about at FTN over the last week is that this second round series against the Knicks, I think, gives them a higher minutes floor and ceiling combination than we saw in that first round matchup against the Sixers, where Andrew Nembhard was, I think, the better option defensively. We saw that play out with the minutes, and our model here has TJ for a hair over 13 points tonight. And then flipping to that Knicks side, I have been burned a couple times to start this series by taking some Josh Hart unders. And I stayed away from this, the rebounds prop rather, on Wednesday for game 2. That turned out to be a good decision results wise. But I'm taking a second look here this morning. We talked about, of course, OG out, and I expect Precious Achiuwa to be in the starting lineup. So Josh Hart through the 8 playoff games this postseason, 15.8%. rebound rate. And that's right around where he was since the trade deadline. Of course, this team kind of remade itself with OG and Precious coming over, shipping RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley north of the border. Since the trade deadline, 16.2% rebound rate for Josh Hart with both Isaiah Hartenstein and OG Anunoby on the floor. But with my expectation that Achiuwa isn't going to get the start in place of OG here, with Achiuwa and Hartenstein on the floor together since that trade deadline, Josh Hart's rebound rate goes down to 11.5%. So am I nervous to take an under on a guy who has already burned me on a number of props to start this series and hasn't sat on the bench yet through these 2 games? Of course. But our model here at FTN does have Hart for 11.1 rebounds in game 3. So I like leaning into the model and the on-off numbers for this one. So it's an under for me on Josh Hart's rebounds. He's Zach Graham, senior NBA advisor at FTN Fantasy on the Progressive Guest Line. If you're just joining us, Zach, I don't know how I feel about that Hart under, especially like you just acknowledged when you're dealing with a guy who plays 48 minutes per game practically this postseason. That McConnell play, I think, is pure gold. In fact, Rick Carlisle, who, you know, I addressed earlier in the show, has spent so much time crying this series about the officiating, maybe he should have looked himself in the mirror and asked himself why McConnell spent so much time in crunch time on the bench in game two when his minutes were as impactful and as efficient as anyone else's out there. So I love the McConnell play. Let's flip it to the Western Conference a little bit. Minnesota, Denver, the Wolves heading home, unlike Indiana. They're up 2-0 in this one. Do you have a best bet for that game?
Yeah, so for me here, it's looking at Jaden McDaniels. And his points prop, most places you're going to find that at 8.5 this morning. Our model has him for a hair over 11 points today. And Jaden McDaniels, again, just bringing in the regular season numbers to my calculus here today. 10.5 points per game over his 72 regular season appearances. 10.3 through his 6 playoff appearances so far this postseason. But that number in the playoffs, again, it's a small sample size, and it's certainly being boosted by those two massive games. Massive for Jaden, right? 25 and 18-point outings, respectively, in that first-round series against the Suns. And as good as Minnesota has looked, Denver as a whole, still a much tougher defensive team in my eyes, a worse matchup than a Phoenix Suns roster. But I think Jaden McDaniels due for some positive regression here tonight. He's just 2-for-14 in the series so far. And like, I'm not going to come in here and try to sell you on Jaden McDaniels being a sharpshooter or an elite scorer. Of course, he's far from that. But he's still a guy that was 49% from the field, 34% from three on the season. That's right around where his career numbers are as well. And then you look at the matchups in this series. His primary defender has been Michael Porter Jr., who I don't think strikes fear in the heart of any NBA player on the defensive end. And then to a lesser extent, his secondary defender has been a hobbled Jamal Murray. So it's going to be rocking in Minnesota tonight, man. They can really step on the throats of the defending champions here. We know that historically a 3-0 deficit is historically impossible to come back from, even though in the last couple of years we've had a couple close calls, including those Celtics last year against Miami. But I like the model's pick up the points here. It makes some sense for me to Jaden McDaniels to finally get it going here in this series, especially in the friendly confines at home.
Zach, the Celtics threw in another clunker last night, getting buried at home by an undermanned Cavs team. You like the Celtics laying the points on the road in the bounce back in game three?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen that so many places this morning. You know, oh, typical Celtics playoff performance last night. And like, sure, that was the case, right? Disappointing, no doubt about it. But right now, 8-point road favorites. I'm of the mind that they should still be double-digit favorites in every game of this series, even on the road. Cavs were scorching hot from three last night, and credit to them. Like, I think JB Bickerstaff pushing the pace a little bit more last night and then going 13 of 28 from deep and 55% overall from the field. Credit to them, right? Like, I'm not trying to take anything away from what they did last night on the road, but Boston on the flip side, worst game of the postseason so far in terms of their shooting, right? Just 41% from the floor, 8 of 35 from three. Got beat up on the boards a little bit as well, 44 to 31. But Boston, most made threes in the NBA this season, 140 more makes than the next closest team. And they did that while being the second most efficient team from three as well at 38.8%. So I think they bounced back in a big way on Saturday. This is still a team on DK Sportsbook, -110 to win the title. So I'm more than willing to lay the 8 points and stay on the Boston train on Saturday.
Yeah, no value on Boston money line. I think if you're going to take them, though, you might as well lay the points. Or if you think Cleveland has a shot at home, they're already 4-0 there, take a little sprinkle on them, +275 on the money line. Zach, thank you so much for the time, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Zach Graham, that's the senior NBA advisor over at FTN Fantasy. Follow him on Twitter at K.A. Weisenberg. Appreciate the time, as always. When we come back, hour two of the show, which means we're also on the DraftKings Network. A lot of great stuff coming up all over these great Friday night games. We'll also talk a little Friday night hockey. Haven't gotten to that yet. Mike's got a lot to say. Don't go anywhere. It's the Lombardi Line on VSiN.